So, if I remember right, you used to be in bands yourself.
That is correct.
Okay. How long did you do that? How'd you get started?
Interestingly enough, I don't consider myself a musician.
Okay.
So, I got into punk and hardcore music when I was 14 years old. And as I kind of went to college, got more involved in the community of, you know, that music. When I was in high school, my dad was in the military. There weren't like a lot of people playing music. I mean, there were people, but it just never really, I don't know, I didn't quite add it up as to how it worked. Even though, you know, there was these punk hardcore bands that I had their records of, I didn't quite understand that they were made up of people just like me and you. You know, I thought that they were like the Michael Jacksons and the Madonnas of the world. But as I got a little older, I quickly understood that it was made up of people just like me and you. But by that time, it didn't seem to really make a ton of sense. You know, it never really like spoke to me that I needed to learn how to play some sort of instrument. So I just became a supporter. I put on concerts. I released, you know, records back when vinyl was a thing before it's now another thing. But eventually, I was asked by a good friend to join a band that he was starting. And sort of a funny story, when I told him, well, I reminded him because he knew that I didn't have any, you know, instrument experience. He said, hey, look, you know, it's not like I'm asking you to come in and do something really incredible. We're going to play 3-chord, you know, punk rock hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
And I could train a monkey to do it. And you're at least as intelligent as a monkey.
Thank
so,
you.
Yeah. So, you know, we did that. And so he, you know, we played in a punk hardcore band that toured the world for 5 years. And you know, my strength wasn't the musical component of it. I mean, I figured, you know, out how to play, but I was more the logistician. I was doing all the logistics for the band. It was very DIY, do it yourself. We were releasing our own records, booking our own tours, you know, worldwide. And eventually that sort of came to its natural end. And I transitioned into being known as a tour manager, where I then was doing a lot of the roles that I had already done for our own band, you know, for other artists that were more professional, that were, you know, trying to make a living off of it more so than just have an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I did play.
Guitars.
I played bass.
Bass, okay.
Yeah.
So the tour manager gig lasted.
There was another. So I did the band for about 5 years, and they overlapped a little bit. Mm-hmm. I started getting into tour management while I was still in the band. It was one of those things like I had a van, and it was for a Swedish artist, a friend of mine that I'd met through touring.
Mm-hmm.
He started a band that was starting to get some traction, and so they were coming over to do CMJ, which is a festival that happens in New York every year, and asked me, you know, hey, you know, can you help us?
Mm-hmm.
I had a van, and next thing you know, I'm figuring out how to buy and rent equipment and doing all of this stuff, and it was a really good time, and really liked the people in his band, and so I ended up tour managing them around the world for about 5 years as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So I spent, you know, the better part of 10 years traveling the globe, which seems like eons ago at this point. Crazily enough.
Yeah, I'm sure. So now you've got this multifaceted record label, you're managing artists. Are you still doing any tour managing for them?
No, I don't do any tour managing. I mean, we facilitate a lot of logistics from our office.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if the artist warrants, meaning if they're large enough and can afford to pay somebody, then, you know, we'll help facilitate hiring a tour manager.
Mm-hmm.
Or just work with, you know, whoever is in the band, or you know, who's a friend, a hanger-on, or a helper-on, or you know, to make sure that they've got everything they need if they're out on the road.
So when you talk about managing an artist, tell me a little bit about what that means,
then. Yeah, I mean, there's a few like metaphors that I typically like to use. I mean, one that's really simple for business-minded people is you're a CEO of a small company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the hardest leap there is, you know, really viewing a band as a functional, right, maybe a dysfunctional business.
Mm-hmm.
And as somebody who has now developed the management company as a business and started to develop other businesses, you know, I realize that it's such a, I mean, these are small businesses with no outside funding other than typically from the members themselves, if they're working other jobs or have some sort of savings, or if, you know, they're fortunate enough to have some parental help. But, you know, so they're really these cash-strapped, super small businesses. So I'm the guy who's supposed to come in and help them, you know, navigate the waters. The interesting thing about that metaphor is I'm not an owner of the business.
Right.
So in the management company here, I'm an owner. I can make intelligent owner decisions based on, you know, how we view the numbers and how we feel about the climate and all of that. But with a band, you're more like an advisor.
Mm-hmm.
The other metaphor that I really like is you're kind of the coach of a team. And so in either of these scenarios, I mean, the coach one works because, you know, I can hold up my hand, which has five fingers, and, you know, a basketball team has five players on the court, and of course a bench. But, you know, if I'm the coach and the band is the captain, mm-hmm. you know, which of course is made up of multiple members if it's a multi-member band, and then you've got the rest of your team that, you know, the coach is working with. So you typically got your record label, your booking agent, and then the last one I consider sort of like a utility player, which that's because you're not dealing with these people every single day. That's like your attorney, your publicist, your business manager, if you've got one. And so my role as the captain is really to lead all of these people, you know, to the goal. In the case of basketball, the goal is to win. In the case of being in a band, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, oftentimes is to become as successful as possible. But sometimes it's, okay, how successful can we be? You know, I work with heavy genres.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chances of the bands becoming arena acts is so slim and few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our, you know, we develop artists. We take them from, you know, their infancy, from when they're kids in a basement, or, you know, nowadays kids recording into their laptop and throwing a song up on the internet. And we find them and really work to create opportunities for them, help them stand out from all of the noise that exists in the modern climate of how people consume music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going into the record store any longer and seeing a massive end cap with, you know, the 12 new releases that week. It's all going out onto the internet, and so how do you break through?
Mm-hmm.
And so we implement the strategies of how do we, you know, align the artist and leverage our position potentially, and or anyone else's position that's on the team, to create these opportunities. You know, so we facilitate or at least oversee the entire career. You know, and so really it starts with setting these goals, adjusting the goals, coming up with timelines, coming up with strategy in order to, you know, have it all work. And so if the band has other team members, meaning they've got a record label or they've got a marketing person or a PR person, like, we work with them. You know, we can direct them, or, you know, have a mutually symbiotic relationship. If they don't have those people, we oftentimes are the ones at least coming up with it and then either having the band implement it themselves or facilitating them to implement it.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Kind of a long-winded answer, but really it's
good.
It's, you know, it's about leading.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the comparison between the coach and the CEO is, you know, you're really trying to take and, you know, help lift this thing off of the ground and move it up to wherever it very well may go.
Okay. Now, the bands that you have on your record label, are they typically bands that you're managing? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Sometimes it helps. I mean, we started our record label, you know, it took me a long time to actually be okay with starting a record label and having a management company, because I come from this old school kind of punk rock ethic of I'm an artist advocate, and I was so concerned with a conflict of interest of, can I release a band's music and be their manager and have, you know, as a manager, oftentimes I'm not going to say like I have many great relationships with the labels that we work with, that we manage artists who are signed to other labels. Mm-hmm. And I actually really appreciate and enjoy that other perspective. I don't like what ends up happening oftentimes in the position that we're in now, where the people that are releasing the music or facilitating that and the people that are managing the career are the same people. Mm-hmm. And whether, you know, you walk out into my office and there's other people there who obviously have different, they bring different opinions to the table, but they're within our company. They they come from the same mindset of our company. And so it took me a really long time to be okay with it, but it was it's sort of one of those, it's where the industry's going. There's not enough, especially on the developmental level, there's not enough money for everybody. You know, and that's being a small business.
Right.
Oftentimes there isn't enough money for everybody. That's why banks exist. You know, you go in and you get a line of credit. If you're a band and you're 21 years old and, you know, you've got no credit, you're not rolling into the bank and getting what you would need is this investment capital. And so you have to find a label or find somebody that can bring, you know, some of those resources to the table. But the goal of the label, I have two labels. One is more like in line with the, well, I mean, we manage electronic EDM, electronic dance music artists. We do manage some, and we have a record label that facilitates that style of music. But the main record label that's, you know, named Outer Loop Records, which is, you know, direct descendant of the management company, we started it because one of our artists that we really believed in, I couldn't get them signed anywhere.
I see.
And, you know, it was a artist that had been around a little while, and, you know, as a manager, it's funny, I've been sort of telling this story recently. As a manager, you really have to get in and know the members of the band. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you know all of them really well, sometimes it's just one or two. You know, and you've only got so much time in the day, and some members, you know, trust the other members in the band to take care of things. And so you get a really good read on people's drive, their motivation, their work ethic, all of these things, you know, because you're interacting with them, you have those conversations all day long. And that's a manager of developing artists. It's a huge part of what we do. And so as a label, it's not to say that people don't do that. I mean, old school A&R people, you know, that's a role that they play. They'd go in, they'd get to know the artist because they wanted to know all of these things. Nowadays, it's not as prevalent. Mm-hmm. You know, people, they want great music, and sometimes they get great music. And I've had this case with myself where I've gotten great music, but it hasn't been done by the right people. It's been done by guys that don't have the work ethic, that aren't able to go and promote it and facilitate and tour on it. And so what's interesting about now running a label where people bring bands to me, I can sense the manager being very passionate about the band because he knows the individuals. And I'm looking at the music first and foremost and saying, okay, well, it's not all there. And the manager's kind of saying like, well, you know, that's only a part of it. They've got what it takes. And it's funny because that's a role that I play very often. So this one artist, I got in with them. They'd been signed to a label that wasn't treating them fairly, that wasn't doing them any favors in the business. The label had a poor reputation, and therefore the band was kind of guilty by association.
Mm-hmm.
So I took them on as a manager. I really liked the front man, hit it off with him, figured out a strategy for them to get off of that label. I mean, they had to buy themselves out,
mm-hmm.
and the band was willing to. You know, they took their capital and said, you know, and borrowed from whoever they needed to borrow, but understood. I instilled in them that if they did another album on this other label, like, their career was basically dead.
Mm.
So we moved away from that. We quickly turned. We did a crowdfund campaign. They had a very dedicated fan base, and mm-hmm. Our office has facilitated a lot of crowdfunding, like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and understand, you know, a really good way to implement that. So this band did a crowdfund campaign, and then basically, in my mind, everything was there for them to get signed somewhere, and I couldn't get them signed.
Mm.
And so I believed in it enough that I went and found a partnership with an existing label that they weren't willing to sign the band outright, but they were willing to allow me to have an imprint and sign the band, and then they would work it. And in that deal, interestingly enough, there was a upstream, meaning, you know, my label was sort of the incubator, and if the band did well enough, it would then jump to the, you know, the parent label.
Mm-hmm.
And that indeed happened on the first album that we did. It did well enough where they've now jumped to that next label. And, you know, the new album actually just came out this past Friday. And, you know, I had a nice conversation with, you know, my A&R guy over at the label that was like, you know, it wasn't like, you know, he was paying us compliments saying, wow, you guys really have done such a good job. You know, I remember when you first presented this to us, we didn't really want it. You know, we allowed you to do it because we could sense your passion, and, you know, you've built a reputation within the management business, and it's been nice to see, you know, that kind of come to fruition.
Yeah.
So.
Now, what's band is that?
It's called Ice Nine Kills.
Okay. And these are primarily metal.
Yeah, this band is what you would call a metal core band. I mean, these are bands that play the Vans Warped Tour, which is kind of, you know, the big summer camp.
I went to one of those a while back.
Cool. Yeah. And they do well.
Yeah.
And it's good. And, you know, I mean, the history of the Vans Warped Tour is an amazing one. You know, Kevin Lyman, who's the founder of it, that's been doing the tour for 20 plus years. I mean, he takes chances on artists. And, you know, I mean, there's 50 or 60 of them every summer, but,
right.
You know, early on, Eminem played, Katy Perry played, you know, he has all of these stories, if you look back through the history of it, where he was the person to, you know, really give some of these emerging artists a chance, and then they've gone on and done massive.
I was there primarily because I wanted to see Social Distortion that year.
Yep.
And the Descendants were playing, and,
yeah.
You know, the Money Made Boss Tones were there.
Yeah, so this must have been in the 90s.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like 97.
Yeah, because they did a really good job very early on of, you know, I mean, it was a punk rock tour.
Yeah.
And, you know, the music, I mean, as a guy that comes from punk rock, what it is nowadays, I mean, the owner's ethics are still in that world predominantly, but, you know, the new music that's coming through, I mean, they have pop punk bands on it, but there's a heavy, heavy component to a lot of the music within that genre that's quite popular. So, you know, he gives a lot of artists opportunities. And this Ice Nine Kills played it 2 years ago when the album we released came out.
So I think that pretty much covers the music side of things, and I also wanted to talk a little bit about Leo's Run.
Cool.
You know, because I know that's coming up.
It is, in February.
And you've got tickets on sale?
We have spots.
Spots. Like
it's a run and a walk, and so...
Like a charity kind of thing, mm-hmm. right?
So it's now open for registration.
Okay. And I got the release that shows the route and everything like that. And what made you and your wife decide to do something like this? Obviously, memorial.
Yeah. So, very unfortunately, we lost a child at birth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were trying to figure out ways that we could make, I guess, a positive difference. Sort of spin the story, you know, to ourselves a little bit. And, you know, we feel like we're very fortunate. We moved to Silver Spring from D.C. 5 years ago, you know, with the intention of starting a family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been quite surprised and elated by the community that, like, exists here. And it really started on our street. We have a really great street on Silver Spring Avenue.
Oh, okay.
Of fantastic neighbors that, you know, we really like. And, and you know, it's expanded from there. As a guy who owns a business here, you know, I've met plenty of people, and the community work to us was something that we really liked. And or, you know, like, I don't know if liked, but we see happening in, you know, the area. And, as a runner myself, was trying to figure out a way to, you know, to have something not only for ourselves but for others who have suffered any sort of loss. Mm-hmm. You know, to just to rally around and have, you know, have an event. And, you know, our son was born on Super Bowl Sunday of 2014. And, you know, I'm a guy that grew up, I like sports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Super Bowl I don't really care about in my adult life, but it's, you know, I mean, it's this massive event that's so prevalent.
Right.
In our, you know, in our society, and I like watching the game. And so I wanted to have something for that day, you know, to do, to kind of take, again, you know, to have a very positive impact, but also take away sort of the pain. You know, and of course it doesn't completely take it away, but it sort of shifts it a little bit. And, you know, last year was the first year, and we were able to, you know, do the run. It was a great success. We had so much support from friends, family, and the community. And then we were able to, you know, gather afterwards at our house, have the game on, and not have it be this you know, terrible thing for us. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, the first year, I'm pretty amazed that we just even got it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do events more or less for a living, but I'm not necessarily the chief organizer of the specific events. You mm-hmm. know, when a band goes out on the road, I'm not the one putting on the concert. I'm the one that's, you know, guiding the career so they can
right.
go eventually do the concert. So this was, you know, a little bit of a flip of the script, and, like, you know, we kind of came up with the idea a little bit later, but we were able to, you know, get it all together, and with a lot of help from a lot of great people within the community. And, you know, yeah, we're gearing up for next year. I mean, it is a challenge because I run, you know, businesses throughout the day, all day, every day, and work a lot of hours, and so this is one sort of, you know, more thing to do.
Right.
You know, we're doing it at the end of the day and on the weekends when oftentimes I'm working anyways. But it's something that was very rewarding to us. And, you know, we got a lot of positive feedback from other people that have suffered losses very similar to ours, and just anyone that's really suffered any sort of loss.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope to accomplish with the money?
Yeah, so Leo's Run is the race, and my wife came up with the idea of Leo's Garden. So we have so many magnificent friends that really rallied around us after our son's birth, and one of the things that we wanted to do was build a garden, a memorial garden, in our backyard. And so my wife thought of the idea of having a nonprofit called Leo's Garden. And we're in the process of figuring out exactly how we're going to utilize the funds. But the eventual goal is to support people, like siblings who have suffered a loss, either similar to what we've gone through, or, you know, in some varying capacity. So if indeed, you know, there's a family who lost a child at birth, and either previously or after that, they have a sibling,
mm-hmm.
you know, a brother or a sister. As they kind of grow up and grow older, we want to be able to facilitate almost like scholarships for them to attend various arts programs, mm-hmm. or, you know, arts, I don't know, my wife has a much better gauge of, you know, the types of organizations that we will target. I mean, I guess the other thing that I should say is we've been able to, like, my wife was a yoga teacher prior to this. I've gotten a yoga certification as a result,
mm-hmm.
Of this. I wanted to, I wanted to be able to look back over the years and say during the time that, you know, I would have been up at night or, you know, whatever rate taking care of our son,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to have something to show for it. So I, you know, did a 200-hour yoga teacher mm-hmm. certification. But, you know, my wife has spent a lot of time doing art therapies, and, you know, we both have found yoga incredibly healing. So trying to support kind of these alternative
mm-hmm.
Organizations and figuring out a way for, you know, anybody that's suffering for reasons similar, not the exact same reason necessarily, but similar, mm-hmm. to be able to do some of these things that have helped us cope with, you know, the tragic event.